Learn from parenting and career experts.
There is no such thing as perfect parenting.
Raising yourself up is important. You're not just raising your child.
Yes.
You and your wife are also raising your own self as parents now.
Most parents were concerned that once the child grows up, will that child respect them anymore?
Children will learn from how you behave rather than what you teach them.
Welcome to Career Uninterrupted Podcast, brought to you by Off Experiences, production partner Done For You Podcasts.
So how do you think this generally overly romanticizing motherhood affects new mothers? Because I've also heard friends come back and tell me, I'm going to shoot all the directors in Hindi movies yeah. who made these fancy things about motherhood and nobody told us what we're signing up for. But does that expectation of being a holier than thou and I need to be, of course, we all want to be the perfect versions of whatever we're doing, but it's a sacrifice that I need to make, all of that. How does that translate into both their journey as a mother and even their journey as a career professional? So in your experience of having worked with people, have you seen that? Have you experienced that?
I think what you said, the example you gave of the movies is a great one, because our belief systems are formed based on what we hear, what we see. So I'd say the first thing to do if you're still feeling that extremely strongly negative way is to expose yourself to other forms of belief, right? So I'll give you an example. For me too, growing up, I saw the same movies and I saw, was exposed to the same narrative. And I always thought motherhood is sacrifice, if I had to put it in one line, right? It was shown as beautiful sacrifice, but at the end of the day, it's still sacrifice in the sense you're still putting everything and everyone before you, right? And to be honest, we saw our moms do it too, to a great extent, right? So we saw moms, we saw aunts, we saw actual role models of whoever we saw, who we said, these are mothers. That's what they were doing. It's true. They did sacrifice a lot. So that's the true story, right? Now, to change that narrative, I read a lot of things. I met other moms who were not, who were doing things differently, etc. And this is my narrative today. And I'm just going to share it because I hope other moms listening to it, because I love it. It really excites me. This is what it is. I read it somewhere and it stuck with me. Saying, in the process of trying to give your child their best life, you end up giving yourself your best life too. And what that means, you want to travel, you want your child to see the world, you end up seeing the world, because now that's how it happens, right? You want your child to be fit, the best way is you being fit, because they're going to see that, right? So you're going to invest in your fitness. You want your child to have positive outlook about work. You take up work and you go into work happily. And you find joy in learning so that you can transfer that. Okay, this is what stuck with me. This is the narrative that stuck with me. That yes, of course, being a mom is a very overpowering feeling. It is true. It is more overpowering than anything or any role you've ever played. So it is true that you feel more intensely that you need to give it your best, that you need to be there. There's more guilt if you're away, etc. So the first thing is just changing this narrative of, this is what I tell myself. If I'm happy, if I'm healthy, if I'm present, if all of these things, that's my version of giving my best to my child now, right? So first, that's the narrative change. The second is blocking the outside noise and being able to listen to your own. So I think, again, it's important to say, we are not saying that, block the noise and go away for 2 months and why do you need to care? And, it's not the other side of it. It's about listening to your voice. So if you are feeling truly that you are missing out or that your child really needs you and you want to be there, maybe you need to listen to that and make some changes. Maybe you need to change the kind of work you're doing, or you need to change something. Maybe that's the situation, but only if it's coming from you. And when it's coming from you, it's a very hard thing to tell, which is why these sessions and things help, because you need to be able to make the distinction of, am I feeling it because I'm told that's how I should be feeling, or am I feeling it because this is what I want, right? So I think that makes a huge difference.
Right. So you know, one of our mental health professionals who does session for us, I love one of the quotes he always does. He says, monkey see, monkey do. So he says, so if you, like, just to mention, if you want your child to be fit, the child will look at you. So if you don't want the child to eat junk food, the child will look at you and say, you are eating junk food. So it's as simple as that. So in the process, to be able to give your child the best version of, or help them be the best version of themselves, you have to be the role model to be the best version of yourself in the process. That's a very great, good thought, because you're only, you know, and different people keep saying this, and even, you know, Sadhguru says this, a lot of different, you know, when you read it, it says that you're just the medium for the child to come into this world, and you're not raising the child. You're not, you know, you're only that, you're just being the general guide, you know, guardrails more than anything else, more than the one who's walking them down the path. No, thank you for sharing that. I think that's a very good thing for someone to remind themselves of.
It's my mantra for sure. It's my parenting mantra.
Absolutely. No, that's brilliant, because this is something that we've not seen our parents do, right? So there's always been that contradiction we've seen. They've been driving a certain message, but there is a certain, you know, certain message that they're doing with their actions. And again, because maybe when we grew up, we also saw them do things a certain way. We feel that's the only way. But today we hear different narratives. So figure out what's the right mantra for you is how you would also put that across.
I definitely agree. And you know, this is just a small example on what we're talking about. I feel it starts so early. For me, I remember it sunk in with breastfeeding, right when you're starting. What will you give if you don't have it, right? So if I don't nourish my body, how will I be able to feed my child with what he needs? So it starts right there, that literally you taking care of yourself is the best way that you can take care of your baby. It's very easy to forget and not drink enough water, not eat enough food, and say that's what motherhood is, right? You forget about yourself and you just take care of the baby. But actually being able to take care of your baby in two great examples, not losing your shit when they are crying, right? Not completely losing your emotional regulation control. If you have slept a certain amount, if you have taken care of yourself, you are more likely, first month there's no control, but after that, to just, you know, be more present. You are the voice of reason so that they can be the child, right? At the end of the day, you can't give what you don't have. That's my mantra as well, that if I want to give love, I need to have love. If I want to give nurturing, I need to be nurtured. So that's again something I would like to tell moms, that anything you want to give your child, make sure you're getting it.
A lot of women, when they talk about it, talk about having a child, I think one of the bigger fears they have is that I'm going to lose my identity in the process. Have you felt a little anything like that, or with any of your clients, have you felt this fear, or have you felt that they've already kind of feel that they've lost their identity? How do they deal with it?
Yeah, I think a lot of women feel it. Again, matricence. It's a lot of people feel it because it is happening. And it is literally every part of your life is changing. Your body is changing. You are now, you can't do anything the way you used to do it. Just take any piece of your life. If you would take a trip, now your trips are planned. I just came back from a trip. Your trips are planned around nap times, right? And not around destinations. Everything changes. Just take anything. What you used to eat in the beginning, you can't eat certain things. Whatever it is, there's just a lot. You can't pick up and have a cocktail. You can't do anything that you used to do. So it's normal that you feel like your identity is changing. Personally, for me, again, I read up a lot on this. So I had sort of changed that narrative for myself, where I went in with the expectation, excited, that I'm not going to be the same person. I went in saying, I'm not going to be the same person. This is going to shake me up and transform me. And I'm so excited to meet the version I am going to become. And I think that's what I like to tell my clients as well. It's very normal that you're feeling this, right? But again, stop fighting it and trying to go back to the person you used to be, because she doesn't exist. It's the truth. She doesn't exist. She can't exist. Can you get out on a whim, not thinking about anything? Can you? You can't have two cups of coffee. You can't do anything that you used to do, right? So it's going to change. But instead of feeling bogged down by it, if we go in prepared, that, you know what, this can be exciting. As you said, maybe there are thoughts that have been gnawing on you and now you can't take anyone, you're going to make the changes. This is going to change everything. You're going to finally, either for some people, they finally start taking fitness seriously because they now their body, you can tell it's taken a toll. For some people now they change the work because they can't go back to work they didn't enjoy anymore because the stakes are high, right? It's absolutely anything and everything. So yes, you will lose your identity, but I think it's a good thing.
So it's the whole caterpillar to butterfly transformation.
Yes, that's what I call my coaching butterfly effect coaching. And that's actually where it came from.
Okay. So the whole transition. So this phase that you are like going through is all about how the caterpillar would be feeling and you are waiting to come out of that cocoon. Awesome. So I want to talk about this and one particular term that I read somewhere. So have you heard of this called, and I'm going to try and pronounce it correctly, it's called fetal microchimerism. So there is a scientific study that says that children we bear leave their DNA in the mother's bloodstream, causing significant physiological changes. So do you think that has anything to do with, you know, how women look at their careers? I'm just curious to know.
I think so. I mean, you know, I'm not, clearly we discussed that I'm not, science is not my strong suit, except I love neuroscience. I'm studying a lot of that now. But I do think so, right? I think, you know, we say teenagers are bound to act out because they're going through hormonal changes. It's the same. So when your body is going through this level of hormonal changes, you're literally carrying a human being. And then this human being is, it still baffles me that we can do this. It's, I think there is going to be a biological impact. It's very normal when we talk about postpartum hormones. We also mistake, I've read a lot about this, postpartum hormones are not just the first month. It takes a lot of time for your, there's so many nutrients that your body's lost. There's vitamin deficiencies. There's a lot going on. So I'm sure it has. I remember early in my life, once I had a vitamin D deficiency that I didn't know of. My lower back was paining so badly and I was just irritable and I was anxious where I would feel like, you know, this little pain is a big thing. Like I was just anxious about my health for no reason for that month or two. And when I went then and did a checkup for my back, etc., I was given some nonsense. And then when I finally met a doctor who said, you know, just check your vitamins. And my D was at a very crucially low level. Like it was single digit, some two or some very, like very bad. I had to get injections, just quick injection, nothing big. Like get quick four injections within 4 weeks and I was back to normal. So you can imagine that when you're pushing out a baby, probably so much of this is going on and we don't realize that it can have such a strong impact on the way we behave, the way we think, the way our bodies react.
Very interesting. So it's not just, you know, and postpartum definitely is not just 1 month, but, you know, so how can someone deal with, I mean, I don't know if deal is the right word. How can someone manage their postpartum better? Because it can also spill over, especially let's say if I'm joining back work around the fifth or the sixth month, I could still be feeling postpartum and it could still stay on. Some of those things can stay on. So, yeah. So, and with that, of course, the additional piece and it's interesting. That's what somebody was saying that just when you're ready to get back to work is also when your child is moving to solids and, you know, sitting up and, you know, those milestones.
There's always a milestone, kind of. I think. We're always going to feel like it's the next.
So both these things are playing on your mind and I don't even know you realize that postpartum is playing on you. I think that's the part. So how do you become aware of it? How do you manage it better? What are the few things that, you know, if you speak to your clients about this, what do you kind of suggest to them? Or in your experience, what have you tried to do?
I think I'm a big fan of pre-planning and pre-awareness in the sense of it could, when I say pre, it could be when you're pregnant. It could be before you get back during your maternity leave. I have a lot of conversations with coaching clients before they get back to work. I just think it makes it easier. So you're not overwhelmed. You go into it with a sense of awareness saying, okay, these are my hours that's going to be. This is what my deliverables are going to be. This is what my support system looks like. This is my boundaries. This is a non-negotiable. You know, there's a lot of different things. And I go through a long list of these things with my clients so that now you're prepared. Of course, you can't be 100% prepared for anything. There's going to be still feelings and situations. But at least you have a sense of awareness for two things. One, you know, this is normal. So tomorrow, if you're feeling something, or you're kinder to yourself. That's number one, right? You're kinder to yourself. It starts there. Number two is having this awareness. So I know what is my non-negotiable. Otherwise, I am always stuck between figuring out, should I be saying no to this meeting? Should I be, you know, here and saying, asking for help at home or no? decide what are your non-negotiables. Bedtime, non-negotiable for me. I am there when my baby's going to bed, when my baby's sleeping. Remote work for me was a non-negotiable. I wanted to be there every day, all the time. Between my meetings, I want to go and play with him. I'm still breastfeeding. That was very important for me that I needed to be home because I still wanted to breastfeed directly every 3 hours like I was. These were mine. I sit and, you know, help women figure out what are their non-negotiables and what are things that you're okay with doing. So for example, again, my support system, I'm lucky I have, you know, my in-laws, my mom, all of that. So I know things I'm okay doing. Like if I have meetings through the day, as long as I can meet my baby and feed my baby during the day and I have this amount of quality time and I'm there for this bedtime and, you know, whatever my non-negotiables are, then I'm okay with the other part. So what is that version looks different for everyone, depending on which industry you're in, what is your support system, what is your level of ambition. There's a lot of different things. Mm.
And so kind of deciding that and not letting anyone else decide that for you.
That always happens. And time, I'd say time is your biggest currency. And that's again, when you said, you know, not letting anyone take, if you don't decide how you want to spend your time, it will get spent. People will spend it. Especially as a new mom, there's enough where it can be spent. So if you don't take intentional control of how you want to spend your time, you're not going to have any left.
So what's the role of, let's say, a community? And I know people say it takes a village to raise a child and so on. And maybe in case of people who are mothers, who are parents at an older age, so in which case maybe their parents can't support them fully, or, you know, they're in a situation maybe that they don't have, you know, parents to support them. In all of that, what can form that village? Who all can be part of that community? And what should I be doing? Like, what kind of conversations should I be having? Or should I be having those conversations? Because a lot of women get into this and realize, I'm the only one doing this day in and day out. And I remember a friend of mine who was living in the US, and when she had a baby, it was a time when neither her parents or her in-laws could come and be with her. And she said, you know, all I want is someone to take my child and I want to go and sit in a park for 1 hour and do nothing. And she said, and I don't have that for, you know, and she didn't have that for close to a year. And she was with the child day in and day out. I mean, not like you shouldn't be, but I'm saying every single moment, waking moment, sleeping moment, you're with the child. You can't leave the child unattended. There is nobody that you can say, hey, can you keep an eye on him? And, you know, and I can step out. So somehow with nuclear families, we've started to become that, right? More and more of that. So how can I build my village? When should I start building that village? Who all can I possibly lean on for support? And is that something that maybe, you know, in case of an experience with any client you've had, you would want to share? Would love to hear that.
For sure. I think it's such an important piece. Really, really important piece. Again, I'm a fan of doing it pre. So if someone's pre, I always say best time to do it. Doesn't mean we can't do it post. If you're already there and you're in the brink where we can figure it out, just always better, right? Pre. Now, existing village, creating a village. So one is your existing village. Usually, especially I coach a lot of Indian women, whether they're living in India or abroad. I tend to coach a lot of Indian women. And one is your existing village, which is your parents, your in-laws. Now, the good part of the Indian society is usually they do want to be around. I can't speak for all cultures, but I'm just speaking specifically for the Indian culture, is they want to be around, right? Your in-laws, your parents, they want to be involved in, they're very excited usually for to having a grandchild, right? Now, first is your existing village and being very aware of your existing village. And again, I'm going to paint a very real picture here. Everyone's situation is different. Okay, so what is your situation? Where do they live? Where do your in-laws live? Where do your parents live? Do they live with you? Do they live close by? Do they live in a different city? Do you get along with them? Are you okay with, are you truly at peace when your child is with them, or does it agitate you more? Right? We have all sorts of situations. And not just for in-laws. I know people who even with their own parents maybe don't get along, and it's the same thing, right? So getting a very real reality check of where you stand with this and picking what works for you. So for example, for me, I live with my in-laws. I'm very grateful that I live with them because that's what works for me, for us. We get along. We do have our boundaries though. That doesn't mean you don't. So I do have, my husband and I are very clear on, we decide what the baby's fed, what the baby's told around. We are we micromanage a little bit, and that's what worked for us. And to be able to do that, we work from home. And it's the same with my mom. My mom lives two buildings away, and we spend sometimes half the week here and half the week there, and it's a lot of people involved, right? A lot of people involved. I remember I was talking to one of my close friends who also has a baby, and for her, she lives abroad, and she said, I can't imagine doing this with so many people. I just can't do it. It's not for me. And obviously, she's overwhelmed too. She doesn't have support there. She said, I'm not coming back to India. I can't do it with everyone around it. And that's what works for her. Whereas for me, I'd rather deal with the navigating of making sure everyone's on the same page and things are happening well than not having, you know, a moment to myself. That's my choice. Correct? So first is being, again, intentional about your choice with your existing family if you have a choice. Okay, if you do have the availability to take support or not, to move back or not, to move closer or not, or, you know, all of those different nitty-gritties, decide your version and then own it. Then own that choice. So I can't do this and then also complain and then all, you know what I mean? So make a very intentional, this is my intentional choice. I want the village. I like my village. Yes, I need boundaries. Yes, I set them. Yes, that takes energy sometimes, but that's what works for me. It works for me that when I'm having this conversation, I know my baby's playing with his mamu or with, you know, his dadi or with his nani, and I'm good, right? If me and my husband are both on calls, I'm okay with that, right? But with boundaries. So again, me working from home, my husband working partially from home, very important for me because again, if I'm on a call, usually he's not. If he's on a call, I'm not. There's a lot of hands, and that's what works, right? And too many cooks spoil the broth for some people, and that's their version. Right? So you need to know your version. Second situation is you don't have, that's not an option. So you're not really making a choice. You don't have it for whatever reason. Maybe your parents are very old. Maybe they are far away and moving is not an option at all, whatever it is, right? Then it's about creating your village. And luckily we have a lot of communities. So making mom friends, getting closer to maybe people from your home who are around, you've not made enough, you know, effort with finding daycare that works for you. Like one of my friends, one of my coaching clients who lives abroad, what she found was we grew up in India and a lot of, again, belief systems, right? The belief of daycare, taking care of your child, not being good was one of her beliefs. And one of those that it was also internal. So it was not one she could break easily. But we managed to find a situation for her where she found a sort of home daycare, where basically this Indian auntie who would take care of the 5 kids over there, and that worked for her. She was now comfortable and she could now do her thing and she could still have a moment. So that's a solution. Again, that's not a one-size-fits-all. So I think you can build all of this. Now we have like Leap Club. We have so many of these communities also where you can find people. I know moms who've, you know, found other moms and become fast friends. And again, if we believe that cannot happen and you only, you know, the friends you have, some women I've coached have that belief as well that, you know, my friends from school or college or they are there now, whatever, and it's just going to be an effort and it's not really going to flow. There's no organic. It's not really going to be support. It's just another thing I need to do. So again, lots of beliefs, lots of figuring out what works for you.
Absolutely. So fantastic. So thank you, you know, for sharing that, because I think it's important to recognize what's working for you, and not every person in your ecosystem is meant to be part of the village in some sense. And second, of course, is for you to be clear about what that means for you. If you don't accept it and don't have it.
Yeah, it's I like to draw a parallel. It's a very similar thing to corporate versus startup, which is such a conversation that goes on, right? Both have their pros and cons. But now you pick what works for you right now, and then you own that, right? You're making an intentional choice of this is what works for me. I want a higher package, or I want job security, or I want, you know, flexibility, and I want free. I'm not saying they exist only one or the other, but just an example that you see this is what exists here, this is what exists here, and then now I make what exists for me, and now I've made this choice, and now I'm going to own it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because I also have seen, okay, people saying, yes, my mother's taking care of the child, but I'm not fully comfortable with my mother taking care of the child because I feel I can do the best. And in some cases, I've told them, I said, listen, either you're completely in control or let the other person, you know, having drawn a few, setting a few expectations, let the other person also be in control. And in cases of family, I said they're well intentioned. You know, they come with the right intention for the child. So they will not have indifference or malice towards the baby. So in some cases, you can maybe say these are not, like, same, these are non-negotiables. Maybe I want the child to be not fed a certain kind of food, or I want the child to be fed a certain kind of thing, or not told a certain kind of thing. Rest, let them navigate that themselves, and don't, you know, overly micromanage them and then get stressed about saying, oh, I'm managing a team at work, I'm managing my, you know, people at home, and I'm managing like so many things. I think that's also something that we...
Yeah, it's not an easy journey, for sure. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's important, and it's the only way. And this can only happen if you sit down and have these conversations and really map up, as you said, you know, what are your non-negotiables? What is, like you said, food, very important one. Okay, no sugar, no salt, no nothing. The food will come ready, will be made. You just have to give the food. Or I will be there when the food, when during feeding times, if that's what's important to you, right? If that's that much of a non-negotiable. Or then nap time, you put him to sleep however you want, if that's not that big a deal for you, right? Or play time, you play however you want. Then I'll make sure 1 hour of play I get in the day where I do, you know, tummy time, or I do educational, or I do what I want. Or no screens is an important thing. Then okay, then that is the non-negotiable. So it's important to know those to be able to convey. If you don't know what is your non-negotiable, what you are okay to let go, then you will start holding on to everything.
Yeah. And then that kind of also kind of goes out of control. And whether we like it or not, it comes down to saying, oh, you know, the child is watching screen all day. Yes. Yeah, because the mother is working. Bichara, kya karega? You know? So it all comes, it comes
crashing. I love our fathers have no role to play, but okay.
Yeah, they're just there. They just provide you with education and money. And like, that's all that.
But it's crazy. I just want to say this, I know, because you brought up the topic. It really infuriated me for a day where I was giving playgroup interviews for my baby. And it's crazy. I'm living in South Bombay. Okay. It's probably one of the most developed parts of India. And still, or maybe because of it, I don't know. I need to go. There are these, I remember I went for this one interview, which is supposed to be the one of the best, I won't name, but one of the best play schools of the city. Father was not allowed to come. Only mother gets to interview. My husband was like, why? I want to be there. Not allowed to come, firstly. Secondly, in the form that you fill out, they ask me, what does your husband do? One question, okay, where he works. And they figured salary, and that's all they cared about. Rest 1 hour is what I do. How do I manage my time? How do everything.
Wow.
And I think it's also not just infuriating me, even more, my husband was more infuriated than me, saying, why are you treating me like a second class citizen? Like I'm equally a parent over here.
Thanks for bringing that up. And I think in today's time, we do have a lot of men who want to play a very active role in their...
I have to say, this is the generation where we have hands-on dads we've never had
before. We've never had before. And but the challenge is, they are, I think, stuck or sandwiched way more than women are. Because in their case, when they, for example, in this case, you know, your husband wants to be a part of it, but the school's saying, we don't need you. You know, so even if you want to play a role, I don't need you. You know, just stay out of the room. Forget about being in the room.
I have to give him credit. There's also, you know, before play school, you have a parent toddler program that starts. And a lot of places call it mother toddler because only the mothers end up going. And now you see a lot of, you know, a couple of dads, not a lot, but a couple of dads who want to be there. And obviously my husband was one of them. And in fact, he went to have that conversation because I had a call at that time. And he went to have the conversation. He said, I am here. You're calling it. He made them change it to parent toddler program. And I was like, I'm so proud of you.
Yeah, no, I think that's amazing because it's just systemically they are also not supported. So when someone says I want to take a parental leave or a paternity leave, they come and say why? Or if someone says, look, I had a rough night last night, you know, and I'm kind of a little slow today, and everyone's like, why are your wife doing all the work? What are you doing? Were you watching a football match?
Yeah, so. Exactly. It's not even I have a client who I remember told me that her husband's boss told him, and he had paternity leave by policy, okay? So he was just taking it. And his boss said, okay, we can't say no because it's policy. He said, but she's going to be at her mom's house. What are you going to do? He said, I'm going there. He said, it was a shock to the boss. He said, you're going there. Like, you're actually going to be there. The
yeah, no, I, and it's changing. But I also feel we are not talking to or enabling or empowering men as well, you know, to be making that.
That is the thing I tell everybody. If you want to put one policy, please put 6 months paternity leave. Everything else, okay? Put equal paternity leave. There goes the bias, right? you'll start looking at men also. That should I? He's just got married. Do you think we should hire him because he's going to go on 6 months? Leave. Do the same thing. Just have 6 months, and you need it. You need it anyway. She's gone through 9 months of, you know, carrying the baby. After that, the 6 months. You need the father has more than enough to do. I don't know why people feel there's more than enough to do.
Other than, I think in, you know, someone said, other than the fact that you feed the, you know, the mother breastfeeds the child. And even in some cases, that also doesn't happen because maybe she's not producing enough or,
correct,
you know, she's pumping. So that's, you know, it comes, it's that. So it's probably like those 2 hours where they need rest. You know, everything can be, you know,
shared.
Absolutely.
And I see this, you know, I understand, okay, there is a biological part of you carrying your baby and your baby recognizes you and your baby does need you, okay, in the first few months, but it doesn't need only you. And if the father is as present in the beginning, that bond builds for the father also. Today, when I walk into a room after an hour and my baby sees me, if he's not seen me for an hour, he's so excited. He's just as excited if he sees my husband and he's not seen him for an hour. And I think that's beautiful. And that's only because he is there as much.
Absolutely. So I'm going to ask you one last question, saying, as your work as a coach, when you work with women, help them identify their work-life goals, what are their priorities, help them achieve these goals. How do you go about this? I know you're ICF certified, but typically what does this entail? And are these always goals only around life, or do you get combinations of the two? If you could just maybe elaborate your process a little bit, we'll be happy to hear that.
Sure. So I'd say, yeah, definitely every session is different. And they're usually typically 1 hour sessions each. And we work for either a month or a quarter together in the beginning, depending on frequency. You know, we either work for a month first, where we meet once every week, or we work for a quarter first, where we meet once every 2 weeks, and we do that for 3 months, and then we go from there. The one philosophy I use across sessions is the A4 philosophy, which is basically first day is agreement. So we agree on what we're working on in this session. Then there's awareness, which is not jumping to to-do, but figuring out what is it that you actually want, why do you want it now, all the most important part of the work. Then there's action, figuring out, okay, now what steps we need to take between the sessions to progress towards our goal. And then there's accountability, which is making sure that the action plan set works for this particular person in this scenario. The likelihood of them doing it is very high that we've set up. And that's how it works usually. So I'd say that's the process that usually works. And it's about just blocking the noise and figuring out what they want and get them there. I think I'd also just want to say, in this Instagram era, there's a lot of course, unsolicited advice, but also a lot of, you know, not required pressure of the version we have of moms. And I want to say this because I get this question sometimes, that you're doing it all. I just want to paint a very real picture, saying that we think that, you know, the mom, you need to look the best, and you also need to be raising your child in the best way. They're having the most organic food and they're playing in the most, you know, most intentional way. And there's independent play, but there's also nurturing and everything, right? And you're, you know, killing it at work and you're getting the promotion. You're doing everything, okay? This is why I say finding your version of it all is very important. So for me, if, you know, someone feels I'm doing it all, yes, I feel I'm doing it all, but I'm doing my version of it all. I'm not the top salesperson. I work with a certain number of coaching clients that I take on every month. I don't have the biggest coaching business that maybe I could have doubled or tripled right away. I've not chosen to do that. I'm breastfeeding my baby. I'm with my baby a lot, but I'm also on calls. And when I'm on calls, my baby is with my grandparents. I mean, with not my grandparents, his grandparents. So on and so forth, right? So just the most important work I do is helping women figure their version of it all so that they can feel like a success, because you are, just the fact that you've given birth and you are nurturing this baby. I think you need to feel that emotion of that you're doing an incredible job and you're doing what you want. And I say this, yesterday I was talking about this. I went for a holiday this week. I just got back. And, you know, someone asked me about, a LinkedIn creator asked me, because I create on LinkedIn, that, you know, aren't you worried the algorithm will forget you because you didn't post for a week? Because it's a thing, the algorithm does forget you. It's like, honestly, firstly, it didn't cross my mind, because if you had a baby and you're on vacation alone and you're trying to get him to all the places, you have no time to think about the LinkedIn algorithm. But also the fact that, and I say this for work as well, I don't create or work out of fear. I do it out of love. yes, money is important. Yes, all those things are important, but I do it out of love because I want to work. I'm mothering my child because I wanted to have a baby, and I'm very excited that I have this baby. And I just want to do both, and I'm going to do my version of both, and that's success to me. So if we go by book definition of success, then everyone needs to be the CEO of the company or, you know, run a multi-million dollar company and at the same time have two kids and at the same, you know, you can't have that everyone else's version of it all. So just find your version of it all and then figure small steps to get there, and then it's very doable.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And on that note, Krisha, to say how do you have it all is your version of having it all, and kind of build that. And anyone who's listening, please seek support in getting there as well. Krisha is one such person. You could reach out to many more people who can help you out through this journey as well. So thanks, Krisha, for sharing all your experiences, stories, some great pieces of insights that I'm also taking back with me. Together, I really want to make more and more Careers Uninterrupted for women, ensure that as they're navigating through as natural and normal a process as parenting, they figure out how to keep their careers uninterrupted. So thank you so much, Krisha, for this. It was lovely talking to you, and look forward to maybe some more conversations very soon.